Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Rock legend Ray Davies was already facing transitions in his personal and professional life in 2004 when, 1 week after being named a Commander of the Order of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth, he was shot in the leg during a mugging in New Orleans. Davies had come to New Orleans in search for musical authenticity and a compass for his personal life. Instead, he found himself a violent crime victim and anchored to a bed for weeks. Davies' recovery was arduous, but he survived the ordeal, which sparked a new run of creativity for the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, composer, songwriter, actor, director, and writer. Davies' meditations on his relationship with the U.S., the country that banned his band, the Kinks, for 4 years in the 1960s before celebrating it in the decades to follow, make up the bulk of his new memoir, Americana, The Kinks, The Riff, The Road, The Story, which is out now from Sterling. Ray Davies has been a titan of rock for more than 50 years and dozens of records, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ian. It's good to be here.
What was the idea you had of the United States before you got here in the 60s?
Oh, as a kid, I grew up in post-war London, very austere times. In fact, I remember food rationing. So America, mainly through the cinema, of course, represented something of freedom, liberty, and expression that didn't appear to be in the UK at the time. And superheroes, cowboys and Indians, childhood dreams. And later on, as I grew, it was the music that inspired me. I watched it was on public TV in London, BBC. I saw a program called a man called John Grierson had a program called This Wonderful World, and he showed a video, a film of a man called Big Bill Brunzi, who was a blues player first born in Mississippi, then he moved to Chicago. And seeing Brunzi inspired me to be involved in music and want to play and aspire to be like that. And all the folk and blues from America seemed to emanate in the South, and that's what inspired me initially to come to America. Of course, when I formed the Kinks, I tried to make my own blues song, and that turned out to be You Really Got Me, which is so unlike the blues, but it was inspired by the music I loved as a child.
I wanted to go back to something you said about the movies. You write throughout your book about your love for historic scenes in the movies and the way they've influenced your thinking in your own life experiences. But later, when you got to Hollywood for the second Kinks record deal, you didn't like Hollywood that much.
Well, I didn't like it. I was disturbed by it because the people I met and the people who worked in hotels, I stayed just off Hollywood Boulevard, a reasonably or cheap hotel for some time, and watched the people who came past through Hollywood who made it so far as getting there and were failed actors. So I saw the success and the failure elements of Hollywood. And it's walking down Hollywood Boulevard, the glamour seemed to fade for me. The stars on the boulevard themselves with the actors' names. So I found it ironic that you could walk over the names of the stars, which is very symbolic, I think, of the way certainly the cinema industry has been. So, and there's a line in the song, success walks hand in hand with failure along the Hollywood Boulevard.
Those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard. I wish my life was a non-stop Hollywood movie show.
So I saw the duality of it, success and failure. It wasn't a dislike of Hollywood, it was just an awareness of the life's sort of cruel tricks it plays on people and how difficult it is to attain success in that industry.
Let's go back to the 60s a little bit. You write about how the Kinks, because of maybe some faulty permitting or whatever, were basically blacklisted from the U.S. during a time that should have been capitalizing on the British invasion of the 1960s. What exactly happened there, and then how were you guys able to come back?
Well, it was a cumulative thing. For a start, the first words I heard from an immigration officer as I came through Kennedy Airport, as it was called then, were, are you a Beatle or are you a girl? And in a very broad American accent. And I said, well, I'm a girl, and so is my brother. Didn't go down too well with the immigration officer. I think it's a sense of rebellion we brought with us in every sense. Also, we were very young. My brother was barely 17 when we first came to the States. So there was, we were thrown into it. We didn't have well-oiled publicity machines like some of our contemporaries. And we were literally thrown into it. And at that time, the band was on the verge of breaking up because of quarrels between my brother and the drummer. And it was in a very tense state anyway. Then we fell out with agencies. Our agent fell out with promoters. And remember, America then, it was even more conservative than now, and it's conservative in opinions and tastes, maybe some of our behavior and antics. I put it down to a mixture of bad luck, bad management, and bad behavior, which culminated in the ban that took away some of the best years of our career.
And yet, when you came back, you were triumphant and really became a favorite of American audiences. That must have meant a lot to you, having spent the 60s kind of in the wilderness.
Well, we weren't triumphant straight away. We were accepted by the few people that remembered us and could get access. Remember, there was no digital satellite network then. There was no MTV. So if you didn't get on the radio and you weren't seen to be playing, which we couldn't, you went off the radar. So we started coming back here to America to play small clubs and gradually supporting other acts. And the process of attaining the success was about 10 years from when we first returned. So it was a long, long winding road to back to get success.
I want to ask you about your role in the band, because you were the creative driving force, certainly in your own solo work, but in the Kinks too. The production, the songwriting, a lot of that was basically your vision. And I wondered, did that evolve over time, or was it basically your band to begin with?
Well, ironically, I was at college. I was an art student, and I played, the first band I ever played in was a West Indian R&B band in a place called Soho in London, sort of the red light district. Then I went back from college to home. My brother had started playing with Pete Quaife, who turned out to be the first drummer. So in many respects, they started without me, and I joined them. And it was by sheer chance that I had written a few songs. And I never envisioned being the singer. I always thought my brother would be the singer. But because I had the voice to handle the songs, I became the lead singer. And when you become the lead singer and the writer, you became the leader of the band. So it's not by design, more than accident, really.
Later, you would play your last U.S. show in the mid-90s, and then I think Scandinavia marked the final Kinks show. You write in the book that had you announced it as being the end of the Kinks on tour, it would have been far too emotional to go through with it. So instead, the band quietly went away. How come the band stopped?
Well, I was involved. I did a book called X-Ray, and I was involved in doing live presentations of that show, which became the premise on which VH1 based their Storyteller series.
Right, with you, and it started as Storyteller.
Yeah, Storyteller. And I still get whenever it's shown, I still get a credit for being the inspirer, the person who started it. So I was deeply involved in doing that. And we didn't actually ever say we wouldn't play again. And you know, for years afterwards, I still waited for a phone call from the others to get together. So it wasn't a formal breakup last gig. It's just that I was involved in doing story. I toured with Storyteller for 5-6 years. So it's sort of not a deliberate parting of the ways. It's just a shift in emphasis, really.
I'm sure you can tell where I'm going. I mean, there's been plenty of chatter about whether the Kinks will reunite to celebrate 50 years of the band. I think, if I have it right, you and your brother, who've certainly not always seen eye to eye, both seem to say it's a possibility, at least.
Yes, I hear these rumors constantly. It's probably the most asked question I get. For years, you know, for the last 10 years since I got shot, my brother's not wanted to pursue his career with me. and now I'm reading about it and hearing about it. It's a subject for discussion, really, because my driving force is to do new work and to find new outlets and new music. That's been that since day one, you know, because we've built a repertoire of music up by doing it that way. And it really depends if I find there's music at common ground that's still worth pursuing, because it's a big, bold venture to do. And I have other writing projects I want to evolve, and so it's up for discussion.
Are you annoyed by the constant questions? I mean, I have to imagine, you know, it shows that there's a lot of demand and interest in seeing you guys back together.
Oh, no, it's wonderful, the questions are asked. It's just difficult to actually, it's a question I can't answer, really. It's as simple as that. It's frustrating, but I can't really give you a definitive answer. It depends if the new music is up to it.
Hmm. Let's go back to the moment when you were being mugged in New Orleans, which had become a new town for you. You were staying in New Orleans, and you went after the muggers, and one of them shot you in the leg. Reading your book, it's just harrowing what you went through, and I wonder how that changed your perspective, if at all.
Well, it wasn't just a gunshot. It was the surrounding medical problems that arose with my heart and sort of general perception of what was wrong with me. They were confused by it. And they didn't spot it was a broken leg straight away. And it was just complicated issues. They were at times life-threatening, but thankfully, through the care, it gradually resolved itself. But it was not so much what happened to me, you know, in the grand scheme of things, in the world, with all the things that go on, it was the equivalent of a toothache compared to some of the things that go on in the world today.
Well,
but it was shocking for me at the time, but what amazed me was it was in a regular hospital called Charity Hospital, and how poor some of the people were in America. You know, this country has a great image throughout the world as being a great country, and it is a fantastic place. But I was not appalled, but I was shocked by the amount of lack of health, good health down there. And it made the English national health system seem quite good at the time. But it's amazing to me how people survive, and how much diversity there is in quality of life in different parts of America.
It struck me that in your search for Americana, which is the title of your new book, and all that entails, that you came here and you were looking for some inspiration in New Orleans, and you got a slice of what this country is known for, which is we have a lot of shootings, and it affected you in a very personal way.
What is ironic is I was inspired by the good guys getting the bad guys. In the end, the bad guys got me. So it's like I say, it could have happened anywhere. London's becoming a very violent place now, as is all over the world. But it was kind of, if you can take it, with a spice of humor. It was cruelly ironic that it happened in the place that inspired me to make music in the first instance.
Did it sour you on us at all?
It frightened me, because an incident like that does scare you sometimes. I had a bit of trauma afterwards, but I went back to New Orleans about 18 months ago to play the Voodoo Fest, and I was just anxious to see the old spots again. But I was planning to get a place down there, but I don't think I'll do that now. But I still love the place. The music is resilient, and there's a reason why people make music down there. It saves the soul of people, and the gospel and jazz, it all comes from pain and suffering. I think in Americana I talk about soul is a thing that goes through bad, dark places and comes out better the other side. Let's hope I have.
We've been speaking with rock and roll legend Ray Davies, and he's the author of a new memoir called Americana, The Kinks, The Riff, The Road, The Story. It's out now from Sterling. Ray Davies, well, what can I say? Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Ian. All day, an hour of the night.
And you're listening listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.